If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Don't call it a podcast. It is the future you chose. Welcome to The Daily Shoah, presented by therightstuff.biz.
This is The Daily Shoah.
And since some of you faggots can't keep straight who's who by voice, I thought we'd been over this. Somebody in the comments called Bulbasaur that southern guy last week, so let's go around the horn here and let's all introduce ourselves. I am the seventh son, and the rest of the death panel, the bagel-crunching hipster from Manhattan.
Yeah, hi, I'm Michael Enoch, and I should also just say I actually hate bagels, but whatever.
That's a bad guy who hates bagels.
They're just too chewy. They're very chewy.
That southern guy, the saddest Pokemon with the racist accent.
How y'all doing? My name is Bulbasaur. Blue collar, I guess Christian, I guess, you know. Pretty much everything that is bad.
All right, bro. Do you want to do a whole podcast about who you are, or can we move on?
Fuck yes, I do. I am also very, very vain and all of that shit. So, yeah. Hi.
Everyone's favorite philosophy major, coming from the second largest philosophy program on the internet, and a graveyard near you.
Yes. Hello. Yes. I'm Ghoul. How's it going?
And, the KKK's chief medic officer.
Alex McNabb. I'm kind of busy putting together a wooden cross right now. I gotta set fire to this thing later, so bear with me, please.
Boom. Okay.
Someone play Vivaldi.
Alright, so now that's all together. Everybody out there got that? You know who's who? Alright, so we're gonna dip into the mailbag. I believe we got some donations. And some feedback. So take it away.
A few people donated. Someone named I'm not giving out full names. So Alexander donated. He gave us $25. That was great. Thank you, Alexander. Woo-hoo. And we got a rather large donation from somebody that we know for the purpose of getting us better mics, and we are actually using it for that purpose. So our friend, I think he wants to remain fairly anonymous, so we'll just call him Cornhole. Our friend Cornhole sent us $300. So thanks, Cornhole.
Thank you.
And we are actually, in fact, using it to get the mics. I think, what did we get? I just purchased a, both Bulbasaur and myself just purchased, what was it that we got?
Used the power of high time preference to go ahead.
Yeah, we use the power of high time preference to immediately place Amazon orders. And I'm sending out another one to McNabb. And Bulbasaur and I just bought one, so we're all good.
We're all set. Thank you.
I'm selling mine to get a crack pipe.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but then I'll give you, that should give you at least 30 seconds worth of high time preference satisfaction. Right. So those are great. I don't think we got any Bitcoins.
Darn.
Oh, no.
The computer.
Oh, God, you're going to tell them?
The computer had the Bitcoins on. It was, whatever, I don't even want to go into it, whatever.
Yes, you actually
have to tell them.
All right, so once again, I failed at Bitcoin. Like, this is. I'll tell the whole story. This is it's actually a new computer that I bought just a few months ago, brand new, and I consider the computer cursed because I was eating one night with my wife, and I was sort of playing on the computer as I was eating dinner, and I started to choke.
Oh, God.
On a piece of chicken, literally.
Or a bagel.
And I panicked, and I tried to, it got, like, stuck in my throat in such a way that it was not going down the pipe. I hadn't inhaled it. So I, tried to drink some water to force it down, and it wasn't. And the water was, like, stuck in the back of my throat. And I started being afraid I was going to inhale it, so I just chucked everything up right onto the computer. So then I was able to wash it off. So it didn't completely break, but then certain keys.
I like how you thought that, like, this computer that I puked on, that's a perfect spot to store my Bitcoin.
Well, I thought it was fine, so I replaced the keyboard. I bought a new keyboard for this computer, replaced it, but then after that was done, when I turned it on again, it was like, oh, the cooling fan doesn't work. So I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'll just keep using the computer. And then, so then it sort of fried on, I think, Friday. And then turning it on again, it says, sorry, boot disk not accessible. Now, I can still get back to those Bitcoins. They're on a hard drive. I can get them. So it's not like it. Anyway, I do need to make an apology, though, to Jay, who had written last time about how he said he got the address by right-clicking. It was confusing to me what he was saying. What he meant is that when he clicked it, when he clicked the link, nothing happened.
Oh.
And there's in the link, it's set up with the Bitcoin protocol and then the address. That's how a Bitcoin link is supposed to be. It's like Bitcoin colon, then your address. And if you have Bitcoin, the application installed on your computer, and you click on a link, then it opens up and it's like, okay, you're sending money or you're sending Bitcoin to this address, right? But if you don't have it installed, then the Bitcoin protocol doesn't do anything. Your browser doesn't know what to do, so it just ignores it.
Right.
So then nothing happens. So what he was saying is that, you know, if you don't have Bitcoin installed, you click, nothing happens. And then if somebody doesn't know any better, they won't know how to get your address. So he's saying you have to be savvy enough to know to right click to get the address in order to be able to send it if you don't have Bitcoin installed. And that's because I just did this by hand and just wrote the Bitcoin link into the HTML, and I didn't put in any plugins or anything like that, no third party, none of that. So he's right, and I was wrong to make fun of him and say he had Dunning-Kruger. I'm sorry, Jay, you were totally right, and thank you for your Bitcoin donation, and I'm gonna get those off that fried hard drive and all this shit, and I'll fix that link. So thank you, and I'm sorry.
Beautiful.
And so as far as everybody, thank you all for donating to the show. Oh, I should also say, I sent over to our good pal Maraku, I sent him some cash because I figure he deserves it for being on point every time with the Merchant Minute. Every time we need him, it's early. He does it every week. So
I don't even have to ask him anymore. I wake up on Sunday morning and the MP3 is in my inbox and it's ready to go. And just thank you, Maraku. You are the man. Even if I spell your name wrong sometimes, you are the man.
So he's like gleefully rubbing his hands together and snickering to himself because I sent him some money.
By the way, the first person to donate under the name Stefan Molyneux and donate $1 will get major kudos from me.
That's right.
I'll only end up with 97 cents, though, because PayPal Jews you out.
That's right. Because they're the ones rubbing their hands together.
One fucking dollar?
Perfect. So do we get some feedback too, or?
Yeah, Bulbasaur, did you want to take that one? Do you have the context?
Yeah, I actually do have it up. Let's see. This is from Toilet Law. I had a question about submissions. I love your site, and I love writing for fun and nonprofit just to vent. I'm a criminal defense lawyer in a fairly large metro area in the USA, and I have a hands-on perspective to the goings-on in the legal system. I regularly interact with the Didn't Do Nothing crowd. Would you be interested in a submission on society and crime? I try and make it a little bit different than the usual chimp out, chimpamania, oh, look, a Didn't Do Nothing did a thing article, and try to make it somewhat useful. What do you think? And I would say, hell yeah.
Yeah, I would love that. I got to figure out a way that I can get in touch with these people semi-anonymously. I'll get in touch with... I'll get in touch with Toilet Law, and there was also MD Rowe, who had sent us an email a couple weeks ago that wanted to get in touch for similar purposes, so I will get in touch with both of you guys through email, and we can figure out another way from there that we want to link up for some more, you know, permanent social media interaction or whatever.
Cool.
Okay, but I really do want to this article about about youth and crime in America.
Youth.
From a first person you know, first hand account of that. That would be a great addition, I really think. So
Didn't Do Legal System correspondent.
It would be nice to have like the TRS legal team.
There you go.
There's your friend Bulbasaur, but he kind of had some issues.
He's iffy, yeah. He's a freaking lawyer, you know.
See, we need a few of those for the day when we finally get shut down.
Yeah, we're going to need a legal counsel, I'm sure. So
shut it down.
We're going. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I believe there's some current events that
yes,
you guys want to discuss.
We're going to do what's going to happen here. We're TRS and we're here with your what are we going to call this? The Daily Happening, right?
Yeah, it's happening today.
It's happening today.
It's happening today.
It's the daily happening. So what's happening today? It's happening daily.
God.
So what's happening, fellas?
What's happening?
Well, I mean, we've had a number of happenings.
That's
over
right.
The past week. There was the Muslim attacks in Canada, coupled with a similar hatchet attack against some police officers in New York City. So, here's the thing with these attacks. And then there was, I mean, we can even bring in the happening a few weeks ago where that guy actually cut off somebody's head. I think that was out in Oklahoma.
Mm, right.
Yeah. So here we have a number of individual Muslim terrorist attacks. And all of them are, of course, I mean, I'm not suggesting that these are planned or that there's like a coordinated group behind all of these. But every single time the media treats it as this is an individual crazy person. And that's probably true. Like, I don't think that there was organization or planning, but they won't link it to what these people believed. I mean, these are all recent converts. Let's even go through recently, and I can even do this in my own head, remembering things done by recent converts to Islam. Okay, so a guy in Great Britain cuts off an old lady's head.
Right.
A guy in Oklahoma cuts off somebody's head.
And tries to cut another one, I believe. They stopped him from a second one, didn't they? Well, whatever, it's not important.
Yeah, he was going to do it to someone else. And actually, here's a great case for firearm ownership, something that the media played down, is that the foreman or the floor manager at that warehouse had a gun and shot the fucking guy.
Yep.
So, good for that guy. There was these now attacks in Canada where they shot up Parliament, actually killed a soldier who hysterically was guarding, what was it, some kind of war memorial in Canada?
Yeah, he was a war.
Actually have a soldier there with a gun with no bullets in it.
Yeah, and he was there because there was, what, reports of urination at that memorial? That's why they
like, why do you even have a gun? I mean, so when, and think about this, that spectacle. So soldiers in uniform with a weapon get shot at, and they have to run away because they don't have
anything in the clip. That's amazing.
Anything to, they can't return fire. I mean, that is.
Kevin Vickers still had to go to the lockbox and get out his sidearm. Like, it wasn't on him. He had to go retrieve it first.
Right, and he's the hero of the situation, right? That's the sergeant of arms or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know if any of you guys actually read the account of what he did, but he basically dived to the ground, rolled on the way to the ground, so he landed on his back and shot upwards and killed the suspect, like out of a fucking John Woo action film.
Wow. Awesome. And I saw, I try not to get caught up in shit like this, but I watched the gay little video of him walking back in and taking his post the day after or whatever, and they gave him
the tricorn hat.
And they gave him like the standing ovation for a couple
minutes.
He did not cry.
He nodded. He gives one little cursory nod.
He did not cry. If that was a goddamn like fucking American football coach or something, he'd have been in tears because. Ugh. I have a thing with men crying on TV. It pisses me off, and he didn't cry. And I love it. That's all.
Well, that's a pretty badass move. I had no idea that he was like pulling like action flick movies. Yeah. That's pretty.
So he shoots this suspect, kills him, goes back to his office for more ammunition, because he's got to send some more Muslims to meet Allah. So goes and reloads in his office, then goes to the Parliament area where they, I guess, had barricaded themselves in.
Right.
And notifies them that he engaged the suspect, and the suspect is now deceased. So, like he's announcing that the pizza just got there.
So that's pretty crazy. I mean, he had to actually doesn't just have a loaded weapon on his. Well, whatever.
I'm surprised he's not going to be prosecuted for like hate crimes or something. He, did shoot someone from another faith.
Hate crimes being those crimes which are not committed by Muslims.
You're right.
Now, wasn't this the sergeant at arms? Wasn't he recognized, given some sort of recognition a few years back by the progressive Muslims in the country?
Yeah. Something like that.
Oh, so he is a fag.
I mean, I'm just wondering, how long until they investigate him for wrongdoing, and apply perhaps some racism was at fault here for why he shot the suspect. I mean,
what I'm expecting is he'll probably want to come out and say that, not all Muslims are like that. I mean, that's me being kind of, I'll take the glass half empty here. I'll take the pessimist view. He's going to come out with some sort of press release about how he's been a friend of the Muslim community for years, and not all Muslims are like that. And he's going to go and have pictures taken with some local imam or whatever, and it'll be really awesome. And I'm sure Fox News and the leggy, brainless fucking twats running it will be like, oh, this is awesome. Here's a puppy. And that's pretty much what they'll do. And they will continue to have soldiers with no rounds in the magazine. And that's Canada. We will keep on going. I don't see the trajectory change.
I think it's possible he just stays silent. I mean, do you think he's going to need to issue some kind of public apology for this?
I think that I'm pretty sure that they're going to want him to come out with some sort of PR thing about how, you know, keep calm and carry on with the dildos.
Yeah.
I think he's going to remain silent.
And already the media has been like, oh, well, not all Muslims are like that, not all Muslims are like that. So that was the third thing. And I don't even know all the details. There was like a couple of different suspects, or was there only one guy in this Canada thing?
Just one guy.
Just one shooter?
Just one guy.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So right. The other thing that was interesting, isn't the suspect, wasn't his mom like a immigration official or something like that? I remember supposedly she didn't apologize. Like, she wasn't saying that, trying to exonerate her son or anything. She said that she felt sorry for the victims and didn't really, you know, try to make excuses for what he did.
Hmm. Well, there you can't really.
Was he also a recent convert, or had he always been?
He's a white guy, wasn't he? Wasn't he a white guy?
I thought he was basically white.
I had heard that he was white that had converted to Islam.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard. It was like, and the dichotomy was just ridiculous, where they're talking about Canada being, who has been a nation at war, like, yeah, okay, quote unquote, since 2001.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with us, you know, in Afghanistan or whatever. And it's, you know, they should expect this kind of blowback from being at war in Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can talk about who specifically said that. That was Glenn Greenwald.
Oh, okay.
Glenn Greenwald was the one that specifically came out with the spin. I mean, it might have been others, but I remember I think it was in one of his places where he writes, like, either Salon or Alternet or one of those places. That it was specifically Glenn Greenwald that came out with, like, well, Canada should expect this because of their support of the U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and the continuing support of the U.S. campaign.
Yeah.
That is patently absurd.
They should expect, you know, when you're going to be so open and accepting to a hostile ideology like Islam in your country through immigration and multiculturalism, yeah, you're going to have to expect that every now and then some of your fucking white citizens are going to convert and turn on you and do violence against, you know, their own people because, you know, whatever stupid idea has been put in their head through all that shit.
Listen to Osama bin Laden that said that if you had two horses next to each other, people are going to prefer the stronger horse.
The strong horse, yep.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, because secular democracy isn't even a horse, it's a dildo. I think. I mean,
it's a butt plug.
Yeah.
It's a butt plug on a wagon.
It goes up and down. It's hard to stay on, but it's not a horse. It's a butt plug. What else we got?
Okay, so, yeah, a couple days ago, right around, I think it was the same day or the day after the shooting in Canada, some guy, again, once again, recent convert to Islam. Well, there was, I guess, four rookie cops standing on a corner in Jamaica, Queens, New York. And if you don't know, Jamaica, Queens is probably similar demographics to Jamaica. So a member of this vibrant community had recently converted to Islam in order to increase the, you know, multicultural feel of the area, I suppose. He went up and there was four rookie cops. I guess they had just gotten out of the police academy, were standing around, and someone had asked them, I don't think he was an accomplice, but someone had asked them to essentially group together to take a picture. I guess he wanted a picture with them or something. So that's why they're all standing right next to each other. Huh. And they don't think that they interviewed that guy. They don't think he was an accomplice. So when they did that, this guy came up. There's security cam footage. He was sort of hiding behind a truck. And he came out. He had literally just a hatchet. And he got one of them in the arm and one of them in the head.
Jesus.
Before he got shot. So I don't know. One of them, the one he got in the arm is already out of the hospital. I don't know what the details are on the one he got in the head. That guy's either gonna, I mean, who knows? He might make a full recovery. Who, it's possible you might have brain damage. He's not going to die, but he might have some brain damage. I don't know. I would assume he would. I mean, a hatchet to the head, that's pretty pretty hard to come back from. But it's not like a movie where you can get multiple blows to the head and like every week the hero gets a blow to the head and gets knocked out without having serious brain damage. That's not real life. Blows to the head are actually really, really, really... So yeah, so that was that. And of course, again, the same story as these beheaders, as these shooters. And it's, like I said, it's not planned. There's not Al-Qaeda behind this, so the media can say, yes, this is not, these are lone nuts, these are lone gunman types of scenarios, but how much is this connected to what they're taught when they convert to Islam,
right,
about the teachings of Islam?
And how many do you need acting alone with your so-called moderates in the background who don't really condemn it all that hard? And how many of them does there need to be before...
Yeah.
You know, so...
I mean, we've had four in just a few weeks. Four lone gunmen that have done
what
things
do we have,
like this.
We had before that the Fort Hood shooter, right? That was one of the originals, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of them. If we were to start going back years, we could pull up even more. I think it's interesting how many we've gotten in the last few weeks, and it could be connected to ISIS becoming a thing, and then it could in fact be connected to the whole thing. But this idea that it's something that should be expected, we could talk about that more later or at another time or whenever we want about this whole blowback, this idea of blowback as being somehow an excuse when things like this happen.
Well, yeah, and it's okay, fine. You should come to expect blowback. It's like, yeah, okay. What kind of measures can you take to prevent it from happening in the first place? Yeah, fine.
Well,
the
idea is that by doing nothing, we will find a way to coexist by bowing to the Cuban Mecca.
Well,
that's pretty much what I get.
Yeah, it's if we're willing to just take it in the ass because it's blowback and we deserve it, you know.
Well, that's why they write for alternate. That's
right.
Why they're left libertarians, because the fundamental difference between right and left is whether or not you sit down when you piss. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. It's like this is what we're dealing with, is the fact that the media, pretty much all of the popular outlets, are completely monopolized by bitch men and women. That's kind of a tangent, but that's why we have all these apologetics. You know, that's why you have all these feminists that want to convert to the Muzzy faith or whatever. They quote convert unquote because whatever. But that's just what it is. It just makes them moist or whatever kind of screwed up psychological justification.
One thing I did see in the aftermath of this recent Canadian shooting, one thing the left did grab a hold of was gun control. Because the guy did have a gun.
What are even the gun control laws in Canada? I mean,
they're already pretty ridiculous.
Apparently, they're not good enough because this guy had a gun.
Canada is actually not as faggy as you might think on gun control. I think that they're probably...
It's a lot of hunting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of gun ownership in Canada. Like, they have a per capita gun ownership rate that's, as you know, similar to the U.S., but it's also similar to the U.S. that... In the urban areas, it's not legal to purchase and carry guns around.
I'm concerned that Kevin Vickers had all that ammunition in his office. Like, what was he planning? Like, what was this guy?
It is ridiculous that the gun control worked on the guys that are supposed to be standing guard, but it didn't work on the fucking perpetrator.
That's the thing. It's like, that's soldier with a gun and no bullets. Just, I can't get over it.
No, and I mean, it's just as bad here because, I mean, when I go on post for my drills, we are not allowed to have firearms in our vehicles. I mean, it is a no-gun zone for any soldier. On an army post, we cannot have a gun. A soldier without a gun, that's a thing. They keep them all locked up in this frickin' vault. And I mean, that's the thing. It's probably the most defenseless parts of, like, urban areas will be military bases. Because, I mean, even the armed guards, you're going to have maybe two armed guards on post at the checkpoint.
Yep.
And it's probably going to be because the way the perverse, bureaucratic you know, incentives there. They're going to go for low ball. They're going to freaking hire these guys that make $10 an hour to sit there with the $9 million that may or may not be, like, up to snuff and may or may not be loaded.
I have to throw in there, you remember that time Dindu shut up the army base?
Yep.
And the... And the left thought that they had gold here. Like, yes, now you guys have to stop using your no-gun zones being inefficient. Like, actually.
Yeah, they didn't actually know what the hell, because none of them would know anything about anything related to the military. It's sort of funny they assumed that they weren't actually tightly controlled no-gun zones. I wonder when that started and what the reasoning for it was.
I believe it started during Clinton's years, if I remember correctly. Another thing, and it's really funny, like if the ANCAPs wanted to take like the country, or if some sort of like anarchist or any sort of radical group, they could just pretty much go anywhere. They could go into any state building and take it, because they don't have armed guards. Like, I think the Capitol building in Nashville maybe has two armed state troopers. That's it.
Well, the federal government's pretty well defended. I mean, there's a federal building in New York City that I know of. And I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I assume that those guards have weapons. I mean, after 9/11 and since, they have surrounded it with concrete barricades, so I'm assuming that's for a car bomb, so you couldn't pull a car to the building. And I just assume that those people I see patrolling it have loaded weapons. I would think so. I mean, the other thing is also police. In a police station, police have live weapons.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think you could just. I really don't think you could just
have a bit of a standoff there, a siege or whatever. But I was going to say I grew up near enough to West Point to have been on post, you know, as a kid and growing up regularly, and it was always every gate was MPs. They weren't that tight. After 9/11, they moved all the visitor center stuff, the museums, off outside So, but now I recently visited there, and the guards at the gates aren't MPs anymore. They're private contractors. I don't know what they're armed with.
Chunky 9 mils.
Yeah, I mean they give your car a once over, and you know what? I'll just put it this way: what I had with me, I told them what it was. I'm not gonna say what it was because I don't, you know, OPSEC. You know who's gonna be up my ass bothering about OPSEC about this story, but it could have been anything. What I was carrying into there, so. I don't know. So there you go with your everybody. So,
yeah, it's very schizophrenic. Like there are places where it's like there's too much government presence and they go way overboard. And then, you know, things that should be common sense. Like, I mean, of course, police stations will be fine. But then you go to state buildings, you know, the Capitol building. You go to military posts and they have maybe two guards that are armed.
$10 an hour.
Millions of dollars of equipment, and they have all this personnel here. They're all defenseless. You have two fat, underpaid guards defending like 200 soldiers, and that would take it about an hour to get to their weapons if they can find live ammo on the post anywhere. Like it's ridiculous.
I don't know what they do with football games. I mean, on post in West Point, you're putting thousands of people in that stadium. It's a military location, and it's not like they're patting down everybody coming through. So I don't know. It's just funny that now it's all private contractors, and it's like you said, there's gun free zones. Is the post a gun free zone? Who knows? It's crazy.
I remember when the Fort Hood shooting, I did ask a friend who had actually been in Iraq, is there a similar base? Is there a similar rule on base in Iraq? And he's like, no.
No.
No. In the actual theater of war, you are allowed to have your weapon loaded and ready when you're on base. So I was like, well, at least that makes sense.
I guess the ANCAPs are wrong then. In America, when you're the people aren't actually the enemy. Isn't that what you're trained if you're going to be military police force? The people are the enemy.
What an ANCAP does is what any other freaking retard does, is he points at, like, one thing that will conform to his biases, and then he kind of runs with it. It's like, look at this one building that the government goes way overboard to defend, and he's going to say police state, and he's going to completely ignore, like, all of these gaping holes in, like, the infrastructure because of all the perverse incentives and all the other stupid things, the liberal agenda, et cetera, et cetera.
What is that?
Yeah, and they also have a thing where they're like, yeah, if I actually directly provoke, I can, like, basically they get mad because you can provoke a police officer to shoot you. I mean, yes.
Yeah, it can happen.
You can provoke a police officer welcome to shoot to rules. You
want. Welcome to society. Yeah.
About these police shootings that no one ever really talks about is even in cases where the officer was just clearly justified, they still do an investigation. Every single time. Every single time there's an investigation. Well, you know, there was one other news item. When I was down recently in North Carolina on business there, I was reading the newspaper, and there was a case where a man in Lumberton, 67-year-old grandfather, his home was invaded by a surprisingly ethnically diverse group of Dindus. Like, there was a Lundi Indian, there was a white guy, there was a black guy, so, you know, we had the whole rainbow there.
Taking diversity training before they raided his house. Anyway.
His house is raided by the future.
I mean, I think that's a good trend with gangs now, that they're being so open-minded about their membership.
That's good. I mean, they've absorbed all the ethnic diversity lessons they were taught in the government school system.
It was invaded. Yeah, it was invaded by a modern sitcom or beer commercial.
Developed there. Anyway, so they break into this guy's house. They're armed with guns. I don't know how, you know, since they're criminals, but apparently gun control doesn't work very well. He has a safe. They direct him back there towards the safe. And at some point during all of this, they discover he has a 19-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, goody.
So they decide, you know, that the best course of action for them to do would be to rape her. The grandfather, at some point during this whole altercation, manages to get his firearm, opens fire on them. They exchange fire inside the house in the shootout.
Wonderful.
Grandfather gets hit several times. The suspects, he hits every single one of them. Apparently, they flee. They steal his car to escape. The Indian, the Lundi Indian, ends up dying in the car, thank God. Got what's coming to him.
Yeah.
The other two retreated to a local hospital. You know, the grandfather is actually expected to survive, but he was in critical condition there for a while. So I guess my question would be, this guy is 67 years old. So if you had, you know, perfect world where there weren't guns, what would exactly stop these Dindus from, you know, pulling off the robbery and successfully raping his granddaughter otherwise?
Well, the lack of oppression would make them not want to do this crime in the first place.
Yeah, that's my other question.
Argumentation ethics. That would have stopped them.
Well, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say that they had successfully filed some sort of legal charge against him.
Well, no, because one of the guys was white, so it's not racist that he shot them, correct?
They're making claims like, oh no, he shot us like when we were outside in the vehicle or some shit like that. It's obviously,
why would that even matter? Like, seriously, wait, why would that even fucking matter? Oh, it doesn't surprise me, but yeah. Jesus,
they've had like it's a laundry list of charges filed against them, so the cops aren't buying any of it, obviously.
But there is pretty much nationwide, as you can't, if somebody's fleeing from you and they're out of your house and in a car leaving, you literally are not allowed to shoot at them. I mean, that's pretty common.
Especially if they're black, you can't spill holy Negro blood. It's like worshiping a golden calf.
That's right.
Yeah. There's been cases. What's a place where they like process scrap metal? I don't know. There's a, like, near where my mother's house is, there's a place like that. And my stepdad tells me, you know, it's funny. There was a story about some guys broke in there, and you know, a few years ago they broke into this plant, and I don't know what they were trying to steal, but they hurt themselves. They hurt themselves on some of the equipment there, and they successfully sued the place. For like not, and it turned out that what they hurt themselves on was in fact in violation or something like that of some like OSHA rules or something. I don't know. Even though they were breaking and entering, trespassing with the intent to steal things, when they hurt themselves on something, they successfully sued. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, this is like lawyers going wild.
Who could be behind this litigation?
Yeah, seriously.
Ball busting bull dykes.
Oops, wrong button.
Shut it down. Shut it down.
My bad. The ball busting bull dykes are not in charge, or are they?
It was about time that one got to be.
I know. I don't. I never get a chance. I should have used that when we were talking about Wellesley last week.
Ball busting bull dykes.
Such a good one. Anyway, well, actually, I think we have some SJW stuff.
Yes.
Happening today on your daily happening.
Well, it's not necessarily an event, more like an article. Basically, that movie. I mean, first of all, we're already familiar with colliding leftist narratives.
Yes.
Another was that article on the right stuff a while back about something like Marxist picketing slut walk, calling it white supremacists because there weren't enough dindus. You know, we're all familiar with this basically. Well, Salon, of course, Salon puts out an article titled "The Dear White People Syndrome." Why movies are obsessed with light-skinned black characters. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm sure you all know the Dear White People movie is basically just Tumblr the movie, basically.
It's Poe's Law the movie, is it not? Basically.
It's just like ironic, eye-rolling, anti-white crap, basically.
Yeah.
This article's pretty hilarious to give you a little snippet here.
Just before you even start, is the article written by a white person? Or is it written? Was it maybe it, written by a tribal person?
Well, when I read this, it'll actually answer that question for you.
Okay, right. Go for it.
So it says, "The film is a bold attempt, but I could not help wondering why a light-skinned biracial woman was the lead female protagonist, the champion of civil rights in the fictitious Winchester University's campus. Frankly, as a light-skinned African-American female, I am tired of seeing women who look like myself presented as the epitome of complexity when it comes to setting forth the many different layers of the black experience for a mainstream audience. Yet we all know why this happens. A lighter-skinned black person is more marketable to an overwhelmingly white-dominated space. Not to mention white appeal equals more marketability."
Gee.
One of the funnier things about that point right there is that this lady is basically saying,
white America doesn't want to look precious.
Well, she's basically right there saying, yes, they did, you know, if her premises are true, which they're bullshit, but if everything about what she's saying is true, she's basically saying that the directors made the most intelligent decision doing what they could to make the message most marketable and therefore spread around more, you know.
Yeah.
But she's saying that was actually bad because it should have been in a way that still fit the dogma more, but it wouldn't have been as effective.
I hate it when people make movies about things that folks want to see. I hate that. Movies should not be marketable. I mean, that's just such consumerist bullshit.
It's racism.
Movies should not be appealing to the mass majority of people. They just shouldn't be.
You know, I think what we should do is chase our tail. I am really, really thinking this is the best thing to do, is that we chase our tail. And it will accomplish something. And, you know, when we go one direction long enough and we get bored, we can chase the tail in the other direction.
Yes, she's complaining about light-skinned blacks, but among the black community, lighter-skinned blacks are preferred amongst them.
Just internalizing their oppression.
I actually think most black people in America are, I can't remember what the statistics are, but I think it's something like people who identify rather as black people in the United States are like over 80% of them are mixed, like
yeah,
black and whites, basically. Like none of them are really black. They're all really biracial to some extent.
If you look at a out of the jungle African black and you look at an American black, yeah,
of course,
there's a definite difference there. I mean, they've all got a little bit of white in them. I don't know what extent it is, but yeah, there is a sort of internal in the black community, an internal caste hierarchy, and of course, you can also look at even things like test scores, job performance, you know, income, and things like that, and it actually goes on a sliding scale by basically. It correlates to the darkness of their skin. Like lighter skinned blacks earn more money, do better in school, get better jobs. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's actually not amazing. It makes sense if you think about it, etc. More white admixture means they do better. And it's funny that I feel like this is something everyone kind of knows, but they want to pretend like they don't. And like has often been said, political correctness is a war on noticing. And I think that there might even be some people that have grown up in an environment where the war on noticing was so severe that they weren't even taught this. So you can even see some younger mulatto woman, like the one who wrote this article, actually not even knowing that this is the case, like not even knowing that, yes, it's sort of well known that the more white a black has in them, the better they do. Like, you know, it's more than even that, just that it's marketable. It's, these are going to be the blacks that have more intelligence, more agency, more ability to actually take instruction, to take direction, to be in a movie, to act in a movie.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I guess that's sort of the unspoken thing we all knew. And it's funny that, I wonder if this writer knows that, or if she's been so indoctrinated into political correctness that she doesn't even know it.
It's Salon. It has to be indoctrination. There's no way anyone – I doubt there's a writer in Salon that can see 2 feet in front of their face.
Well, I think we all just need to come out and admit, and I think we need to force some of these people to admit that the black community – doesn't exist. It does not objectively exist. What it really is a signal word that tells them that, hey, I am a white presenting black person that knows how to play the game. Gives me that. And that's really gives me that. And they're able to make it into three words instead of gives me that, or whatever they want to say. And that's just the thing, is when they identify as black, when they identify themselves with this imaginary community, it's really just signaling to their white friends that you know, they're part of the struggle with these white people. Like, they're helping white people work through whatever stupid white people shit they have. Because if you're around an actual, a vibrant member of that community, they don't identify with any fucking thing. They identify with sugary beverages and stabbing your ass.
And my dick.
That's it.
Yeah, there is no such thing as the black community. It's just a euphemism for the black people in a certain geographical area. Like, they don't have, so the black community in America just means black people in America. They don't have an actual community. And there's actually even a thing that's been talked about, like, when you attach the word community when talking about people, you're talking about people that don't actually have a community. Like, yep. You don't say the white community, because white people have communities. Now, all white people, all white people in the United States is not a community, right? But, like, the town I grew up in was a white community. Mm-hmm. There was a community. Like, it actually was. It was a town of several thousand people, and there was civil organizations that people joined, churches, you know, civic groups, clubs, etc. People, everybody did all that stuff, and people participated in the community. I mean, you do not ever get that with blacks. You don't get it very much with Latinos. You might maybe a little bit too, sir. I mean, anytime they use anytime they use the word community after an ethnic group or a whatever categorization,
they're projecting.
They're basically wishing. Yeah, it's wishful thinking. They're wishing. I mean, and frankly, people don't say the Jewish community.
Nope.
And they don't say the Jewish community because Jews have communities.
Do they even say? I've never even heard Asian community. To be
no, honest. They don't say Asian community either. No, that's, you never that's hear
a,
that
that's
said.
That's a pretty funny point.
Asians have a very definite community, though. I mean, I know that from personal experience when I lived in Greensboro. Like, if you knew one Asian, you knew every Asian in the entire area.
Well, that's because they all...
You're just saying they all look alike now.
Damn it.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Well, no, they say they're all cousins, actually. Yeah, like seriously, if you're from the same part of Vietnam, it's like the same thing. Latinos just call everyone their cousin. It's like, no, you're not actually cousins. You're just from the same part of Vietnam.
Plus, but like, yeah. Koreans, there's only like two Korean last names, right? Like Lee and Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of colliding leftist narratives, though, I was digging around the world of Tumblr. I just do that sometimes because it's funny.
Oh God!
You find interesting stuff. Well, basically, I found there's a growing feud that is sure to expand between the transgenders and transsexuals.
Oh boy!
It's evolving to a point where the two groups have created loaded lingo against each other and arguments ready for each other. Basically, what started, I believe what started this is for the longest time, transsexuals typically would get together to talk about their severe depression which was just a common thing.
How funny, how unusual, how coincidental.
Well, I mean, of course, and I mean, even if you're looking at them through leftist eyes, you would understand why they would basically feel self-destructive. Like, it seems logical that the community would have
community
self-destructive thoughts or depressive thoughts.
There's the word community again.
Yeah. Only, I mean, actually, they do get together and stuff. I guess I have to call it a community because it's so fucking teeny tiny. And
yeah, sometimes the word community does mean community, actually.
But, you know, with Rise and Tumblr and trying to ride on the lowest common denominator, you know, there's been a huge increase in transgenders, which is basically nothing.
Dress up.
It reminds me of, I don't know if anyone listening has ever been to the comic section on Facebook. It's just a guy who draws funny comics. There's one he recently drew that has this guy with this girl. And this girl says, I just came out as transgender. Is this going to affect our relationship at all? And he says, of course not. I love you no matter what you decide you are. And then in a thought bubble above his head, he goes, yes, nothing changes. But basically, a transgender is, I'm a man, but I feel like I'm a woman. I'm going to start saying I'm a woman. And then a transsexual is basically, you're taking the hormones, you got the surgery. It's like transsexuals basically taking it all the way.
And one of the things that the transsexuals don't approve of is the fact that a lot of times they've been lumped under this transgender umbrella and they don't see themselves as, you know, just basically being fakers. It's like, to them, it's real.
To some extent, aren't fakers. Like, they probably, you know, I personally think that they have a severe mental disorder. I mean, I think they actually have a psychological disorder because they do talk about how they can't even live in the skin of the wrong sex. Of course, I know where this is all going, but go ahead.
Well, anyway, what caused this feud, I believe, is that you have this group of transsexuals who always get together and they basically try to relate to each other's problems and relate to each other's depression. And then you have this rise of Tumblrism, which is basically trying to glorify all things that are, you know, freaks basically to society. And while I believe originally transsexuals didn't really seek social acceptance, they realized that that's not something they're really going to get. But the new crap is really about trying to force you to accept it and applaud it. Ugh. It's everyone wants to get on board, right? Because you want to be the biggest victim. And with transgender, all you have to do is just proclaim you're transgender. Now you're part of the club. And that's what I believe really got this feud going. So basically you have the transsexuals calling the transgenders trans trenders.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
In response, the transgenders call the transsexuals true scum.
I think that one thing that's important to note about this is that the transsexuals actually are this is not the first time they've come under fire from another social justice-y type group. Oh, and from what you're saying, I didn't know that, but it sort of makes sense that maybe to a certain extent they had accepted their lot as social freaks and they weren't going to get acceptance, and maybe they just keep to their little group and that's that. Yeah. But radical feminists also hate transsexuals. And I can see there's a definite clash, because what transsexuals do is they essentially claim that there is this essential link between your gender and your sexual body. So, like, because I am actually – and most of them are men that want to be women. I think this is a real psychological disorder. I really think that these people genuinely believe it, and I think that they have a serious psychological problem and they need treatment. Whether that treatment is hormones and chopping off their dick, I don't know.
I have the treatment.
I'm not an expert, but if it is, then so be it. Whatever, they don't – whatever.
I have the treatment, Michael. It's right here.
We're going to need a bigger oven.
Someone had to say it.
But what they're doing is they're saying, because I am mentally a female, I need to be in a female's body in order to be able to live with myself, in order to be able to be – I mean, they're never going to be able to live with themselves. Most of them end up committing suicide. But they're claiming an essential link between body and gender. And that's something that social justice has been trying to hijack and and get rid of. I mean, the whole concept of transgender is that there is no essential link.
Not all boys have penises.
Between body and gender.
That's what they say, right?
I wrote an article called Pandora's Transgender Box, and there's an article linked in there from a transsexual criticizing transgender individuals and the transgender movement. Might want to dig it up and take a look, because she goes in, or it goes into great detail about it.
It.
He, she, it, whatever it is.
I've got something in the soundboard here, if you guys are ready. If your body is ready.
Oh, yes.
On the subject, our friend Kimmy Goebbels is back.
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.
I hope your Jimmies have designated their special pronouns, because I'm Kimmy Goebbels, and it's time for the Shitlord Report. Rather than worrying about figuring out cooler and more terrifying ways to rip our enemies limb from limb, apparently America's armed services are mulling over whether or not to let trannies and drag queens serve openly alongside their cis faggot comrades. This week, for the first time ever on U.S. soil, the Perspectives on Transgender Military Service from Around the Globe conference was held in D.C., featuring over 15,000 confused and broken individual servicemen slash women slash other from token armed forces around the world. You know, the kind that just sort of serve as extended welfare projects that sit around assuming the U.S. will show up if anyone or anything actually needs to be bombed or shot to death. Yeah, like Canada or Sweden or whatever. I'm absolutely shocked to learn that those two countries gleefully allow men in ponytails, pantyhose, and skirts and their dicks tied back to defend their immigrant-stained homelands. Real lookers, Jesus. Too, let me tell you. While it is a bit tempting to consider the confused horror that a charging drag queen infantryman would inspire in your average Muslim fundy, I can't really think of a way to justify the policy based on the initial lulls. It's bad enough that we sent actual little girls in uniform into Iraq and Afghanistan, and sending confused man girls in can only make us look even weaker and sillier. And God forbid there's ever a showdown with based Putin over anything of consequence. But I digress. From the things so obvious they shouldn't even need to have a law for it folder, apparently openly trans individuals have been banned from serving in the U.S. Armed Forces for several decades. You know, based on the wild idea that being born with a penis and thinking you'd be better off cutting it off and wearing your sister's clothes was a mental disorder? How quaint. I bet a bunch of old white men who didn't care about authentic expressions of struggle and overcoming oppression came up with that completely scientifically and medically relevant conclusion. But don't worry, shitlords, good news. A new independent study led by Clinton Surgeon General Dr. Jocelyn Elders, along with former Coast Guard Health and Safety Director Rear Admiral Alan Steinman, came to the shocking and groundbreaking conclusion that not only is there no compelling medical reason to ban open trannies from serving, but that uber cuck President Obama, he himself married to a trannie, could lift the decades-old ban without congressional approval. Freedom really is the best, guys. The end of history truly is glorious and empowering. It almost makes me want to transition to trans Ebola kins that I could be quarantined and kept away from all the assholes who live in this country. But shit, we don't quarantine sick people in this country anymore, whether their guts are melting or if they just feel like they shouldn't have tits anymore. I have an idea. How about a travel ban in and out of San Francisco, Provincetown, and Fire Island? Can the DOJ seize Tumblr servers? Would that help with this faggotry outbreak? I mean, really, is it too much to ask to at least preserve the patriarchy in the fucking military, even if we're going to tear it down everywhere else? Shit, the Marines need a few good men, not trans wolf otherkin asexuals. Thanks for listening. For the right stuff.biz, I'm Kimmy Goebbels, and this has been the Shitlord Report. It is not my job to educate you, dirtbag.
Steinman, man.
Yeah, that was
pretty awesome.
That was a nice touch. That actually did. There was one thing we were going to talk about before that, you know, Kimmy mentioned in her presentation, which was the quarantining issue.
Oh yes.
So yeah, I mean, actually, finally, some people in the government decided that, you know, actually had their heads screwed on straight for a change and decided that they were going to do something sensible. So unilaterally, without the federal government, without the CDC, without any permissions, New Jersey and New York State issued a 21-day quarantine for anybody coming back, medical personnel coming back from helping in Africa.
That's racist.
So because apparently what happened was this doctor came back and supposedly all was well, and then, you know, he was out. It's actually funny, of course, the guy was out bowling. He went bowling, and then the next day he gets Ebola. And I think actually a newspaper, one of the tabloids in New York, came out the headline like Ebola in the night away. And of course people got mad about that.
Ebola in the night away.
Yeah, that's pretty clever. I actually gotta find that.
Or like the guy that okayed that.
Yeah, with the editor that was like, that's great, we're going with that.
Jesus Christ.
Have white people actually died of Ebola yet?
No, but this guy's gonna.
Oh, yeah,
no, think so? I think we had one guy who died already.
No,
white person has died.
Wasn't it the first guy that had it and we started treating, and he fought bravely and then died.
Really? I thought that guy survived, and he's the one who's donating plasma to all these people.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
There was another one who survived, but I'm pretty sure that the very first one died. Either way, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, that guy, he donated plasma to that QT Asian nurse, who has now been declared Ebola-free. And so there's several members of our Facebook group that will be really happy about that. So they instituted this quarantine after this happened, right? Because this guy was a complete... I mean, he was... Yeah. I can't even express... I mean, the thing is, he's actually going to die, and he'll either be the first or the second white person to die. There was a headline today that said his disease has escalated to the next stage. So from that, I'm assuming that he's too far gone to be saved by a plasma infusion or whatever it is.
So that means we're going to care now. That's how the argumentation goes, is now that a white guy is going to die from it, now we care.
Yeah,
serious about Ebola now.
That's right. Now there's
That's how they're going to spin it. But one thing that it actually, in a way, did spur them to get serious, because they realized that, hey, maybe New York City would be a really bad place for people with Ebola to just be walking around, so we're not going to allow people coming back from Africa to just enter it. Either New York and the whole system here, New York and New Jersey are very, you know, they're very close, and Newark Airport is in New Jersey, but it's a metropolitan airport that serves New York. So people come in there and they'll come right to the city or whatever. So there's the whole Port Authority transit system. Anyway, these two states are intimately linked. So the governors of both states declared unilaterally, with no permission, not asking anybody, people coming back from West Africa will be quarantined for 21 days. Sorry. Like, that's finally. Just it. That's the fucking rule. Finally, somebody did something right.
That should have been in place the second that this bullshit started out there. That never should have been.
The whole country should have done that. Like, that, the whole United States should be doing that. I think Illinois also put something in place now, and which makes sense because they have Chicago. So the whole country should have been doing that. That, like, if you're coming back from West, I mean, because if we send medical personnel there, they should be allowed to come back, but they just have to wait for 21 days in a secure location. Right. That's what it is. So this nurse came back. So the next person that comes back, she was some Doctors Without Borders nurse or something, and she had been there for a month because she wanted so desperately to help these people. She comes back. She gets put in quarantine. The next thing you know, like literally the next day, she has an article in, like, the Dallas Morning News about her unfair treatment.
Oh, God.
And how she was, like, she was treated so unfairly, and she was scared, and there was fear and hysteria when she got to the airport and told them that, yes, I'm a nurse, yes, I've been in the Ebola zone, etc. And they didn't treat her with dignity and respect. Instead, I'm assuming what happened is she said, yes, hey, I'm coming back, I was in the Ebola zone, I was treating patients, and they immediately initiated some protocol. They got people with hazmats, and they escorted her to where she is now, which is in, like, an isolation tent outside of a hospital somewhere in New Jersey. And that's where she is, and that's where she's going to be for the next 21 days. And she's crying. Her mother's crying. She writes this editorial.
Why are you even crying? Like, what's the matter?
I know. That's what I want to know. Like, why are you even – I mean, you're supposedly a health professional, right? You don't understand?
Right.
Like it's amazing the narcissism of this woman. I think, like – Yeah.
Also, the fact that this gets around, probably, and there's people that sympathize with it, it's just people who think that their asshole is the universe. Her problem isn't even, like, she's undergoing something that's, like, painful or extreme. It's just like, oh, I have to do something that I don't want to do.
I mean, that's literally, that's, like, quite literally what it is. I mean, her blood was tested and there's no signs of Ebola in her blood now, but they're still keeping her in the quarantine. I mean, basically she has to sit in isolation for 3 weeks because that's the protocol that's set up. And even though she's tested negative, that's the protocol. And I actually like that. Like, sorry, no exceptions. And I think the governor of New Jersey, who's actually, he's actually pretty cool sometimes, that big fat guy.
Chris Christie. He's great.
He's actually fucking hysterical. He said sorry.
If he ever ran for president, oh man.
He couldn't win because he's fat, but...
But he's such a dick, he's great.
Yeah, but he basically said, like, yeah, sorry, that's... Rules are rules, and you have to, like, you can cry all you want, but... It'd be great if he said it in those words. Of course, he had to be diplomatic about it because he's a politician, but whatever. But he basically said, yeah, tough shit, in political language.
Yeah.
But it's,
yeah,
I mean, it's funny because...
Knew who you're going to vote for, so fuck, stay there.
Oh, she has to miss the early voting.
It's like, what... I'm sure that they'll find a way to let her vote because that's like a fundamental human right.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's just like, can you even imagine the narcissism? I mean, it's like you're a public health professional, right? Public health is supposed to be part of your concern. I mean, from what I'm taking away from this is she went to Africa to help. I'm sure she's got plenty of selfies that she posted to her Facebook of herself in Africa. And it's like, she wanted to come back and get all these pats on the back, all this social approval, all of this status, you know, from being the selfless martyr to go help the blacks overseas. And instead what she got was, oh, holy shit, we have to put you in an isolation tent because you were in the Ebola zone. And so her whole plan, like her whole status signaling party of coming back and having everyone fawn over her and hear about her experiences and how she got in touch with the unique culture and all this bullshit, that's on hold for 3 weeks.
Yeah, she has to wait 3 weeks for that pat on the back. Oh,
yeah, she has to wait 3 weeks for all of her bougie white friends to give her big pats on the back for her bravery and courage.
But now she wrote this article, right?
Yeah, she wrote it. It was in the – I mean, you could look it up. I didn't read the thing itself. I only read an article that said she wrote it that then took excerpts from it. But it was all just like, wow. Oh, you know, I was – it was – there was nothing but fear and confusion.
Yeah, it's funny that basically, yeah, she probably went through all of this for social affirmation. She wanted pats on the back. And then she just wants some ASAP, so she it's like the fact that she basically took this opportunity for like to write an article about why everyone should pay attention to her.
Right. I mean, yes, it's all about her. She didn't waste any time in even getting an editorial out. It was the next day after she was put in quarantine, she's got this editorial out to the newspaper. And I'm sure, like, in the editorial, she talks about being in touch with her mom. I'm sure her mom, like, reached out to some media outlet or something. Somehow something happened, but her mother was also quoted, her boyfriend was quoted about, it's really crazy to treat people who are just doing something brave like this, and it's like, dude, what?
Yeah. Like, how fucking dumb are you?
I mean, so much privilege.
Well, I mean, look, this actually, we're actually going to take a sharp turn, but this is reminding me of something really fucking insufferable. All right, so the state of Tennessee is about to have, in their early election, the major issue is Amendment 1, which is basically something where the state is going to implement a 48-hour waiting period for a woman wanting to get an abortion. Basically, she goes in and says, I want to kill this baby, and they say, okay, come back in 2 days. You now have a spot. Well, apparently, this is an unprecedented level of infringement on human rights. And this goes back to this woman that's having to wait 21 days to go tell her story over her freaking soy chai latte. It's so unbelievably, insufferably, it runs up against everything that I believe, like human action, a human agency, just the very fundamentals of like civilization for the past thousands of years. We have to accommodate the immediate whims of some stupid fucking gash. And it's so unbelievably rustling on. I'm monkey noises right now. Just thinking about it, I'm just wanting to fling my shit on the wall.
Sorry.
Mike explained the politics of this a long time ago. Like with abortion, it's an issue where they cannot afford to lose any real estate whatsoever. So they're going to take a stand against anything seen as an affront to their abortion stance.
Well, any sort of real social gain that the left has, like, I mean, any sort of perceived attack on education, on the education system, that their monopoly of it, like, they would lose their shit. I mean, that's look at the fight they've had over vouchers. I mean, look at how hard they fought even over homeschooling. I mean, they were throwing people in jail for a long time. They were taking people's children over homeschooling up until we finally had the law passed. I mean, it's anything that kind of elicits this sort of response is something we should constantly poke at because it's a definite weakness. The whole notion of having to appease the most base and I mean, it defeats the whole notion. Like, it kind of shows what a cruel farce the whole thing is. It's like a woman has a right to be treated like a child until she dies because that's all she really is. So give her the same rights accorded to men that fought and died for it. And that makes me very angry. So,
I mean, it is actually does relate to what we were just talking about in that both things are actually accommodating the immediate whims of women. I mean, like this returning Ebola nurse wanted the immediate social congratulations that she was expecting. And I mean, the very fact that her fundamental concern in her editorial was, I worry that returning health staff won't be treated with the dignity that they deserve. And it's like, well, there you revealed your whole motivation. I mean, she was in Africa for like a month, right? So there she reveals her whole motivation for going there was like she wanted this social approval, and this quarantine puts it now on the back burner for 3 weeks. And this abortion thing, it's like, you cannot immediately fulfill your whims. Like, I mean, 48-hour waiting period.
You'll fulfill them, but just wait.
If they had that kind of ability, they would be pregnant in the first place.
How many women have you ever heard say things like, I want to go and help third worlders because I just love helping people. It's like, I know you and know you don't like helping people.
Yeah, I actually, one of the females I know, she apparently is now going into an RN program. And I'm like, well, good. You know, there's a lot of money in that. I'm doing it to help people. It's like, no, you're not. What you do to help people is give hand jobs at parties.
Oh, Jesus.
Fuck.
Not a fucking double shift cleaning bedpans, because that's the help you're going
to
be doing.
It's the same thing to them. Like, they treat everything at such a vulgar, childish level, and it just it almost makes the most melodramatic, a neo-reactionary bullshit sound okay, because it's like, you know, I actually sometimes want to just implement white people communism when I hear you talk. Like, thanks. Thanks, Miss Lady Thing. You make me want to destroy capitalism.
So, going back, when you talk about this this 48-hour waiting period on abortion, I assume that the talking heads come out and call this an extremist position?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, this is the thing. If you attack...
That's the war on women.
Yes. Anytime you come anywhere near abortion... even in with the most reasonable things, like wasn't there a during the Bush years? Bush was in support of some kind of partial birth abortion ban. I don't even know if it took place, but I just remember seeing whoever
it was they were attempting to institute a third trimester abortion ban that failed, and the Republicans were calling it partial birth abortion and various.
Anyway, the point is the talking heads on TV referred to this as an extremist position on abortion. They were saying that, you know, it was once again another case of the liberals telling the conservatives, you know, what strategy they should use in trying to push their, you know, stuff is, say this, forcing the president to take an extremist position on abortion. And it was like, it was just so disingenuous. It's like, yeah, I mean, this isn't an extremist position. This is the first, like, little nibble at trying to, if they're even trying to, get rid of this, like, this fact of the law in this country. And I think
what is an extremist position is seeing a human life as a convenience.
Exactly.
Like, That's pretty extremist to me.
Right. But where I was going with bringing that up is what you have to tell conservatives is when the liberals are yelling and screaming that you're an extremist and they're calling you names, you're doing something right.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Mike, I believe...
And keep going. And, don't
stop. Don't be scared. Don't simmer down. Don't moderate your stance. You're in the ballpark now when they're doing that. And I think we should bring this up. Mike, you went to a fundraising dinner recently regarding the conservatives who could use a little bit of this advice.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of advice that we give the actual conservative movement and what you just said about how, yeah, and what they also want, just to quickly add to that, one thing they need to get through their heads is that when the entire media is going to be against you, with the exception of Fox News, okay?
Right.
So when you try to institute the partial birth abortion ban or this 48-hour waiting period, the entire media is going to be against you. Every newspaper, every media channel is going to be against you, with the exception of Fox News and conservative talk radio. So it's going to feel like there's actually a significant number of people in the country for whom they are completely alienated from that media. So the entire country isn't necessarily going to be against you. It's just that everybody with the loudest voices will be. Anyway, yes, I did in fact go. I'll try not to give too many autobiographical details, because people that have, you know, a high stakes in society were involved. So I did in fact go to a very expensive fundraising dinner as a guest of a relative of mine who's a large contributor to this, to a very mainstream conservative, I don't know, it's not really a lobby group, it's a nonprofit, I guess it's like a think tank, I guess that would be the best thing to call it. So I went to a fundraising dinner for them. There was some speakers and some students that were given scholarships by them, etc. But it was basically these were conservatives with money, like old money conservatives, and it was at a very old money private club with, you know, everything was, you know, granite and wood sculpture. It was really wow. I've like, that building was amazing. And as we were going up the elevator to the floor where the dinner was held, the elevator stopped a few times, and members of the club got off at like the library floor, and it was like this amazing big room with books everywhere and Greek statues and like these big leather chairs. It was so like, it was like my wet dream of the surroundings I would like to be surrounded with all the time. Right. So yeah. And one of the interesting things was we were sitting there having our dinner as the keynote speaker was speaking, and a friend of my relative who I was a guest of leans over to her. He was also at the table with us. He leans over to her and he says, like, you know, it's interesting how not very diverse this event is. It was all white people. I mean, it was literally all white people. There was like one black person there that I saw and a couple of Asians. And so he says that to her, right? And then later on at the cocktail hour, she mentions it to me. And she's like, that's one thing that always kills me, is that why is it that every event I'm at is always like this? How can we reach out? Why do they not even listen? And then she gave this story, a funny story, how she went to the nail salon and she talked to the Korean or the Vietnamese woman there, and she's like, well, you're a business owner, like you should vote Republican, etc. And she's, you know, she says that the woman says that she said that she would, but the woman was just trying to get her to stop politically, yeah, right, proselytizing to her, you know what I mean? And then she said, it was actually funny, so then she said a Democrat woman that was in there started, you know, challenging all this and talking about the Republicans being racist and all this crap, whatever. The point being, I said to her, look, don't even worry about diversity. Like, you're not going – I tried to sort of red pill her a little bit, and at that event, and considering the constraints, it was only so far I could go. But, you know, I would really love to be able to tell conservatives, and this was like upper crust conservatives, so these people were out of touch with actually the rank and file of their own movement. Like, they probably wouldn't get the actual outlook of a blue-collar conservative in America, because mm-hmm. These are people that have read Russell Kirk, they read Edmund Burke, they're into William F. Buckley. I mean, that conservative movement is dead, and frankly, basically, there was never very much to it. I mean, that's like a very small... I mean, it's funny. What's the actual intellectual tradition there? I mean, I basically listed it out.
Yeah.
It's such a not inspiring tradition for me. I mean, I don't find that to be any... There's really nothing there. I mean, libertarians have a better intellectual tradition, yeah, far better than them. Reactionaries have a better one. Fucking liberals have a better one. I mean, like, liberals, you can go back all the way through this whole intellectual tradition of Marxism. I mean, these guys have, like, a couple of kind of lame guys from the 50s. I mean, I don't know. It's just the whole thing that they have there is so uninspiring and bland. And it's like, it's sort of like, no wonder you're losing. And then the very fact that they're not even intellectually armed to understand that the whole concept of diversity is arrayed against them. You right. will not have diversity. Mm. I mean, the whole thing was a supposed celebration of Western civilization. So it was all white people, all very upper crusty intellectual. I mean, this is sort of like the last dying gasps of the optimate caste in America is what these people represent. And they don't know it. They have no idea that they're dying. They know they're dying. They don't know why. And the fact that they're wondering about diversity is part of why. It's like, you should know, you should acknowledge, you represent white people. And I said this, I actually said, in not quite in those words, but I basically said, don't worry about diversity. Don't even think about it. If everybody at an event is white, that's fine. I didn't actually say that's good, because that might have been too far for the surroundings, but that's fine. Like, conservative, the GOP needs to understand they de facto are the party of white people.
They just need to recognize it.
They need to be the party.
They need to announce it. Not announce it.
This comes from the whole fact that, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. They don't have an intellectual tradition. They don't have people that they don't want to dig in and actually make these defenses. Like, it's like they've been marching to the liberal beat for so, like, because, I mean, they pretty much come from liberals. I mean, you look at Whitaker Chambers.
They're consistent liberals. I mean, if you'll allow me to interrupt very quickly, one thing I did want to say is the entire tradition started with basically a defense of an actual liberal society against communism. Now, I think that's an admirable thing. Mm-hmm. But it does not intellectually arm them for what is actually going on now. And as far as they actually think communism has been defeated, and they go back to a tradition as good as it was, as necessary as it was, of opposing and rooting out communism. But they are talking about actual communists, like actual people that were loyal to Stalin, like actual people that were saying, yes, we have to collectivize all manufacturing in the country. We have, you know, like real communism. Like, that doesn't actually, I mean, it exists, but it's very small now. But I mean, there's cultural Marxism, which is a much greater threat. They're definitely not equipped to deal with that. Like, the whole thing is, like, William F. Buckley in the 50s stood up to the commies. And yes, he did. Great. Congratulations. But that, what does that do for you now? It doesn't do anything for you now. Like, they don't even know how to deal with what's happening. And they support Western civilization. They're in favor of Christianity, all of these things, but they don't, they're just not grasping what they're up against. And if they don't actually think, I mean, I know the Republican Party is against immigration. They need to actually understand that if they are going to be in support of Western civilization and defending Western civilization, a lot of this, because of the nature of the organization, a lot of it was focused on campus life and what's going on college campuses, the intellectual attacks on Western civilization on college campus, the Marxism, the cultural Marxism. So they get that, they somewhat get this diversity thing, but what they need to understand is that they need to actually, if you want a Western culture, if you want Western civilization, you need Western people.
Right.
You need the people to be Western, and that means, I'm sorry, that means white people.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing to be sorry about.
This is another thing. This is another thing. I mean, I came kind of from a real slipshod kind of low-class conservatism, and I, from there, bounced over to objectivism. I eventually became libertarian and cap. And the thing that really infuriates me is you look at libertarians. Okay, a lot of the youth, you know, the ones that aren't completely dildos, they're going more libertarian. It looks like libertarianism is going to become the new Republican Party. They're rebooting the same fucking problem because, okay, they might have a little bit – they might have an upgraded economic idea, like, you know, Austrian economics. You know, for it does have flaws, but, you know, it's better than what, you know, the Republican – you know, they have better arguments, but it's still – ill-equipped to deal with the social issues. It's still completely wanting to go lockstep with the left. The left wins on social issues because it's divide and conquer in the name of diversity and equality. And we don't get that. They don't get that it's not about bringing everyone together. It's about destroying groups. It's divide and conquer. And they don't get it. They do and they don't.
Yeah, it's weird. They do and they don't in funny ways. Like, they do get what the left is doing in some ways, but they don't. They genuinely think, and these people, it's so funny when I hear, you know, diehard, hardcore liberals accuse Republicans of racism. And, you know, whether they think it or not, whether they think it's true, I know for a fact it's not true. And in fact, in the classically liberal tradition of individualism, meritocracy, they are most definitely not racist. Like, they believe that that it can happen for black people. They believe that it can happen, that we can bring in other cultures, and they can, they're okay on Islam, but generally speaking, like, they're really bad with the mestizos. Like, they think that the mestizos can be
turned. Oh, they think they have family values. The family values right. Don't stop at the Rio Grande or whatever the fuck
Bush
said.
I'm sorry. No, they don't.
They do.
No.
Well,
no.
You're wrong. Different.
But, so it's like, they're consistent liberals is what they are, and they just need to understand that you're not going to recruit a bunch of mestizo immigrants to being Republican. They are not going to be carrying on. Look at South America. Look at the politics of South America. If you bring in people from South America, politics are going to shift towards the politics of South America. Marxism runs fucking rampant down in South America. It's everywhere. That's what you're bringing in. You know, look at the when it comes to Islam, I mean, this is more a message for liberals. I think the conservatives pretty much get it with Islam. I just think they're wondering how they could express it politically correctly, and that basically we should just keep it Muslims out. You know, look at the politics and behavior patterns in the Muslim world.
Well,
look at Africa. I mean, people are the ones that are linked to these things. And they don't get that. They think give them a free market, give them civil liberties. Let's have a constitutional republic, freedom, all these freedoms in a free market, and then we can bring in Africans and mestizos and Muslims, and then they'll all just adapt, and we'll all – no, that's not going to happen.
Nope.
Not at all.
It's just context denial again.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, that was my rant.
I don't know if these people are all going along with that, the optimate case, but they, you know, like the Limbaugh conservatism, you know, you see a lot of like complaining about political correctness. You don't see anybody actually really disregarding it or rebelling against it. This has been said before. This is nothing new to the TRS or on this podcast, but the argument that the conservatives make that I'm not the real racist, that liberals are racist because right. He has low expectations. It's like that shit has got to stop. It's like everybody has low expectations. What the conservatives do is they see those very spectacular black and mestizo other groups too, outliers that make it into the movement. Your Thomas Sowell's and whatever the fuck Dinesh D'Souza is, and you know, people like that, or who's the guy in Bobby Jindal? Like, he's the dothead conservative savior that's going to save us somehow. I mean,
because he's a you know, non-white that could potentially win elections,
right?
That, I mean, that's like actually things that they think about.
I mean, it's who can we put up there that can win? Like, I'll tell you what you can put up there that can win: a white guy. A white guy and be like,
white guy that doesn't have to, that doesn't follow a leftist script.
A white guy that says, yeah, I'm a white guy. Vote for me, all you white guys out there, before there's not enough of you for me to win.
Well, that's the major problem, and we might already be past that point. But I also did want to sort of mention that I, you know, when it comes to the rank and file, the blue collar guys that listen to Rush Limbaugh, I mean, you know, they would not take much to get them over to where we are. Like, they probably secretly are there.
Well,
already
let me tell you, man, I was,
and, you know, but they're just, they're afraid of what the actual overall culture will do. And even I'm sure that the leaders of their movement would, you know, they would rebel against any kind of move from the bottom like that. But I really, you know, you're not going to be able to red pill the optimate people at this gathering I was at. And they're all going to, half of them are going to be dead in 2 years anyway.
But where's their money going to go? You know, I mean,
but you could definitely get the blue collar.
I had Limbaugh on the other day. I took a ride in the truck. It's so fucking tepid. I mean, he was talking about Hillary, and he cracked the same joke he's been cracking about her for 20 years. She puts her pants on one leg at a time, just like all the other guys. Well, I don't know why he turned into Nixon, but she puts her pants on one leg at a time, just like all the other guys. It's like, it wasn't that funny in 94, and it's still not in 2014. Funny. It's like, it's not. And it was just such a tired, like, I was sad. Like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to be in the truck for 15 minutes. So I get to hear a segment of what Rush is up to. And it's just like, well, I'm not missing anything, not swallowing that show whole 3 hours a day anymore. But so I really don't know.
Funny enough, as far as that milieu, Michael Savage or Michael Wiener is actually probably the best. I mean, I highly enjoy his show.
I got to get back on that one. Anyway, though, you know, all these political machinations, we're all just pawns in the bigger game, and I think we know why.
And speaking of Michael Wiener, I guess we could go into,
we're gonna do the Wiener Minute. I mean, the merchant. here's our friend Meraki.
Bad boys, what you gonna do when we pogrom you? This is the Merchant Minute. This week we've got a Category 5 happening, as Ebola has now spread to New York City, using Craig Spencer of Doctors Without Borders as a vessel. The man looks very merchanty, especially in the pictures where he's sporting facial hair and wearing glasses. He went for a 3-mile jog, took a trip on the subway, went to a restaurant, and went to a bowling alley shortly before showing symptoms, we're told. The rest of us can't even manage to go bowling with our cousin Roman when we've only got a dead body in our trunk, but this guy has a disease that makes you shit out your liquefied innards, and he's good to go. My recommendation to all New York residents is to stay away from bowling balls and the subway, and you should probably avoid vegan restaurants. I don't know where he ate, but Craig Spencer looks like the kind of fruit bowl to funnel estrogen-filled soy protein to his Christ-killing gullet. This past Wednesday, a white man who changed his name to some Frenchy kebab shit to reflect his sand kike religious LARPing opened fire in the Canadian Parliament building, killing an army reservist, and was then shot dead by a good guy with a gun. You know, those people the Jews tell us either don't exist or can't overcome their mindless panic and will only make matters worse once someone actually starts shooting people. The shooter has now been posthumously dishonorably discharged from the Aryan race and will be denied entry into Valhalla. If the Heaves are behind this one, it seems they're sacrificing their immigration goals on the altar of gun control, or maybe they're confident that those Canadian pussies will still bend over for both. In other sand kike news, on Thursday, a New York City LARPer, this time a black man, showed his devotion to his Juggalo family, whoop whoop, peace be upon them, by burying a hatchet in a cop's head. The police quickly killed the Dindu and accidentally shot a bystander in the back. So some old-ass ceremonial Canadian sergeant has better aim than the NYPD. If the Jew decides to rile up some darkies over the loss of this upstanding individual and make them loot and burn down bodegas, we will let you know. And in a scene reminiscent of Christ whipping the shilling merchant Hebes and turning over their tables in the Holy Temple, Michael Brown's mother and an unidentified male beat the shit out of Michael Brown's cousin with a metal pipe because the cousin was selling Dindu Nuffin merchandise on hallowed ground, which is something only the mother of the Dindu is allowed to do, according to the Silverback Code of Ethics. I only wish this had happened with Anne Frank's father when he decided to squeeze shekels out of his daughter's death. Oh well, I take solace in another Jewish narrative blowing away like ashes in the wind. Like Trayvon's mom before her, it's only a matter of time before the Jews make Michael Brown's mother do a rap song. For the rightstuff.biz, I'm Morakiu, and this has been the Merchant Minute.
I hate when we talk about something for 45 minutes and his is better in like two.
Yeah. We covered all it. Actually, the one thing we didn't talk about, the Dindu Ferguson things. I wanted to, but it was just too much other crap.
We can't. We're on high time preference overload as it is. So
yeah, this is already going to be a long one.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the show for this week, folks. Enjoy your new New York and New Jersey quarantines. I guess you're safe if you live there, right? Join us next week. Maybe we're going to discuss the collapse of the Dindu narrative. Or maybe not. I don't know. We're going to do what we do, and you're going to love it. So there.
Always give your best. Never get discouraged. Never be petty. Always remember, others may hate you. Those who hate you don't win, unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself.
Adios, mi general, adios. Se pierde lontananza el sol, y con el último redoble del tambor, se escucha un el eco de su voz. Mi general, adiós. Quiero cerrar filas otra vez en ese ejército que invicto comandó y que mil glorias a la patria le entregó. Adiós, mi general, adiós. La página que hoy día se cerró a la historia como ráfagas de sol, justo en el umbral donde se encuentran los valientes, los que se atreven, los que jamás se han de olvidar. Soy un ciudadano más que deudor de su grandeza y sencillez. Hoy vino a despedirlo Don Manuel. Adiós, mi general, adiós. La página que hoy día se cerró se abre ya la historia. Ráfagas de sol, justo en el umbral donde se encuentran los valientes.